You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Studio after a few days doing post-traumatic winning. So good morning to everybody out there. I have to tell you, if you haven't been in Southern California, it's been a little warm. And hopefully that changes sometime really soon. Because that's not what I signed up for. I'm telling you right now. Not only hot, but humid. Like where the hell am I? Right, someplace in Central Florida, for God's sakes. Get that stuff out of here, man. We don't like it. So good Friday morning to you. I had the privilege last 3 days of doing post-traumatic winning with the Marines of BLT-14. And I'll tell you what, I'm blessed in my life, honestly, to have just incredible experiences, you know, meet young Marines, you know, from all over the country. And I was thinking last night after I came home, I've never done post-traumatic winning like this, like what I just did. Essentially did it for companies. So, I don't know, somewhere between 150 and 200, you know, Marines, depending on the company. And so it was interesting because there's smaller audiences, and so you kind of see them better, if that makes sense. So what's called the Regimental Instruction Facility, the RIF, at Camp Horno. It's the old gymnasium because they built a new fitness center. So, it used to be the fitness center was the gym. You had a gym and not so much a weight room. Well, that's obviously changed. If you go to fitness centers now in the Marine Corps, they are big weight rooms. All kinds of different machines, right? From free weights to machines, right? That you can do more controlled events on, and then treadmills and elliptical machines and cardio stuff, and you know, rooms to do yoga and other things to increase flexibility. So, I mean, they're fitness centers now. The gym at Camp Horno is a tribute to a day and age in the Marine Corps where fitness was, you know, running up and down a basketball court And so we used gyms for stuff like that. And then there were smaller rooms in there, and they were, you know, you could lift weights and things like that. But so anyway, they've converted that into a, an instruction facility. So the smaller rooms in there have been modified. They're now classrooms. And then we were in the gymnasium. But so it gave me a better chance to, you know, to scrutinize the audience, if you will. And one of the things I came away with was, so you can imagine, I mean, first of all, it was hot. We did it at 07 and 1700. So 07 was a cooler time of day, but, you know, after about an hour and a half, that thing warmed up. And then 1700 was straight up hot in there. All the doors open, you know, Marines taking their blouses off, so in their T-shirts. And so in that environment, as much as they love mental health, which they hate, it was really interesting to see how attentive they were. Now, well, Mac, how do you judge that? Well, I'll tell you how you judge it. One, are they watching you as the speaker? Because they can't sit there and just stare straight ahead. They can look at the ground. They could do all kinds of stuff. So when you see them sitting up and you see them following you, and that is, I would tell you, 80% of the audience, I think, I mean, one of the things I came away from is that they're interested. They're interested in mental health. And so, in particular, the way this gets presented to them is, you know, it's kind of, I don't like the term in your face. I mean, to me, it's just honest. I'm going to tell you the truth. If you don't like it, so be it. So, but then, I mean, this was a little bit different, right? Or at least I presented it different. Because the thing that as I reflect on what I do, the video clips they see, the audio clips they hear are three sergeants, a corporal, and two lance corporals. General Mattis is in there, and General Furness is in there. So what dominates the presentation from the military side is junior enlisted Marines. And so I kind of went out of my way to emphasize that in terms of, hey, 27 years ago next month, I went through something that changed my life. And it happened to be a helicopter crash. And what changed my life, well, the event certainly changed my life. But what really changed my life would be the advice I got within 3 hours of seeing somebody be decapitated and three other guys die. And so I said, so I'm here to kind of pay that debt back. But what I'm here to give you is that sensitized me back in 1993 to this thing, this mental health thing. Because I was a consumer, I never thought that I'd be standing up here in front of you guys someday. And so I mean, I and sadly, and I said, and I have this as a sad message for all of y'all today, that is not going to be the last event, the last difficult event of most of your lives. I hope it is, but the law of averages says it will not. You're going to see from my life, right? There would be more days, and they would be awful days in my life. And so most of you are going to experience those days. So I think it's important to learn from this. But what I'm here to convey to you is because of what my gunny told me, and what he told me was, you're never going to get over this. You know, he sensitized me to this mental health thing. And since then, I've learned a lot more than that. And I'm here to pay back that debt to him. And I'm here to share with you the traumatic wisdom of Marines. principally junior Marines, because senior staff NCOs and officers fake it. And they don't really like to talk about it. I mean, they will on the down low. They will if you're good friends with them. But by and large, they stay away from it until they meet me. And so I said, so look, I'm here to give you a no-bullshit view from the Lance Corporal level of what it is to live with this stuff, through this stuff, and not only live a good life, but live a great life. That's what today's about. And then I add in, and if you don't like it, I don't give a shit. And, you know, and it's funny because now, because the audience is smaller, right? You can see them. And you can, when I say, and if you don't like it, I don't really give a shit, right? You see these heads like nod, like that's straight up. Like, all right, I like that. Right? So, and it is kind of the icebreaker because they walk in and they sure as hell don't want to be there. And I would start the presentation with, as much as you don't want to be here right now, and they all start laughing, right? Yeah, I said, yeah, I know that shit. I'm glad you're here. And let me tell you why I'm glad you're here. And then I just kind of say some of the things I just said about 27 years ago, next month. I went through something that changed my life and then kind of roll through what I, and then, and this is why post-traumatic winning is an interesting thing to do, because it changes every time. I change is based on my experiences. So I've just had the experience of, you know, meeting and to a certain extent helping Stacy Falzerano. Now, if you haven't heard that story, Stacy's husband, Tom, colonel in the U.S. Space Force, came home to PT because their gyms were closed and had a massive heart attack and died. They have five kids. Stacy is a big-time brain, okay? Yeah. Like, she's like the brain that ate New Jersey. That's her. She's got, like, major, major gray matter between her ears. And in the thing that she wrote me, which, you know, she wants to be the forward of my book, and give me 1 second to pull it up. She signs it, Stacy Falzerano, widow of Colonel Thomas Falzerano, mother of Michael, Thomas, and Valentina, author of China's Strategy in Space. Yeah, you heard that right. So Stacy's specialty is China's strategy in space. Okay. That's what kind of brain she is, right? Faculty member at the International Space University, former intelligence weenie, and now post-traumatic winner. Okay, so I look at them and I say, so let me tell you how powerful this is. And then I read this one paragraph of what she wrote me. Trauma and grief are embodied in me as I'm figuratively lying face down on the ground, spiraling into blackness. Panic and fear envelop me. Sadness engulfs my soul. I'm utterly lost, rudderless. What do I do? I can't breathe. Is this it for me for the rest of my life? I feel desperate and drowning in despair. I'm the strongest person I have ever known, and yet I'm in need. I need to reach out to somebody. Who? But I don't want to show my panic and my weakness. And so I'd look at them, and I say, so of all the things that she can do, what does she do? I said, now mind you, the Space Force and the Air Force offered her whatever you need, we will give you. We will be more than happy to open whatever door to whatever you need. I said, who do you think she called in the midst of that? She called on your wisdom. That's how powerful this is, right? It is the truth. It is the truth. All right, so look. That's how legit this is. Using a term that that a staff sergeant told me was used by a lance corporal. And I said, and so I got this about 2 weeks ago. Now, I said, a friend of mine listens to the radio show. And he listens to stuff like this. And he calls me. He started listening to about a year ago, and he always sends me religious stuff. He's a religious guy. Mac, you're doing the Lord's work. Keep it up. Blah, blah, blah. I always email about, you might want to dial that down, man. I don't know if he's working through me, but I'm just doing what I think I should be doing. And he's like, no. And so I'm like, all right. I said, so a week ago, I said, just this past Friday, you know, he sends me an email. And he says, hey, man, can I talk to you? And I said, yeah, I'm not doing anything tomorrow. Give me a call. So he calls me. And he proceeds to tell me that he's been raped in his life. Man, I put a picture of my friend up. No other identifying information. I said, see that big galoot on the far right? That's him. We were roommates twice. And I tell him, you know, about the incident. You know, and they're just sitting there looking. And I said, and he hears these stories to include Stacy Falzarano, inspired by the wisdom that comes out of people like you. How you got through this. And he calls me and for the first time starts talking to somebody out loud about this stuff. And it changes his life. And now he's going to go to a place that I'm going to show you here. And so post-traumatic is really different all the time. And so, you know, really, and I think it's the appropriate emphasis of with that group of Marines is really appropriate because I keep saying, look, this is your traumatic wisdom. This is a path and you're going to hear them. The other interesting thing is now I've done it long enough where guys have seen it before in other units. So before yesterday afternoon, two Marines come up to me, one a corporal, one a sergeant. And they said, hey, sir, how are you doing? I said, I'm good. How are you? And the sergeant says, I saw this. I was with 3-8, you know, 2 years ago, and I saw it in January of 2019. I said, no shit. And he was like, I've been telling these guys that it's not what you think. He said, they don't mostly believe me, but I've been telling them. And I said, that's awesome. And then a corporal walks up. I think his last name's Adams. And he said, or Evans. And he says, hey, sir. And we shake hands. And he says, it's good to see you. I saw this at Camp Lejeune too. And he said, and I've listened to a bunch of your stuff on All Marine Radio. And he said, I love General Zinni. Right? Corporal. And he's like, I've been telling my guys this is good, that they'll enjoy this. And so we had this interesting conversation. So the guy in 3-8, I said, because Matt Kiker's in 3-8. I said, you were in 3-8? And he said, yeah. I said, did you know Matt Kiker? He said, I know Kiker. And he kind of rolls his eyes. I said, shit show, right? He said, he was. I said, wait till you hear him. And he just looked at me. I said, yeah, wait. Wait till you see what he's done with his life. And so that's another cool part of this is that guys have seen it before and they're excited to see it again. And to include the battalion commander at 3rd Tracks at Pendleton, he was the G-10 for the 2nd Marine Division. So when I would go do this at 2nd Marine Division, he would be the one that would facilitate it. You know, we've gone to lunch and hung out, and he's just his name's Will Moore, Lieutenant Colonel type. And so he sent me a note yesterday. He goes, hey man, I heard you're out doing post-traumatic winning with 1-4. He said, I think that's awesome. My guys saw it. We heard about it down here. He said, I'm really happy that's, you know, that's one of the things that is being done to help. And so I said, hey man, whatever I can do, let me know. But, so there's all kinds of different things. that I don't know. It's just a post-traumatic winning is this dynamic event that that morphs and changes and seems to change, at least in my opinion, as the owner operator, seems to change in appropriate ways. The other thing that is it becomes more and more apparent to me is really the premise of post-traumatic winning, and that that is you choose. I believe that now more than ever. That you choose the way you respond. And there's a quote that Josh Goldberg showed me, and it's the premise. I use the quote as the premise to illustrate that you have a choice, not so much in what comes into your life, because most of us don't choose that, but you do have a choice in how you respond to what comes in your life. And so the quote is this: between stimulus and response, there's a space, and in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. Viktor Frankl. And then I say, between stimulus and response, there's a space. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small. In that space is our power to choose our response. Uniquely human, animals don't do it, right? They're instinctive animals. They react to whatever either attacks them, or they have an instinctive reaction. They don't reflect and then say, well, maybe I'll do this, right? Animals don't react like that. And then the third part is, and in our response lies our growth and our freedom. It can also, in our response, lie our lack of growth and our self-imprisonment. But I believe that premise now more than ever. And Josh showed a video that I still show, and it's a Jewish rabbi. And let me see if I can play the audio for you right now.
There's something I want to tell you about.
So let me just. This is Rabbi Abraham Twersky, and he's going to talk about stress. And the way I set this up, as I said, he's going to talk about stress, but I want you to, in the word stress, I want you to see the word adversity. I want you to see stress. And as you migrate to the deeper end of that pool, I want you to see trauma. Okay, so I want you to see a spectrum. Okay, and I want you to listen to this. And I want you to understand that this is an illustration of the choice that you will make between hunkering down, numbing yourself, and hoping to get through it, and choosing a path that where you transcend this. Okay? So those are the two choices, essentially.
There's something I want to tell you about the stress and how we have to look at stress. Okay? And I think it's an important thing because many people have told me from my lectures it's the one thing they remember. Okay?
Now, I don't know why, but every time I hear that, it makes me laugh. Every single time. Because here's a guy who speaks all the time. And he tells you, you know, it's the one thing that people tell me that they remember from all my lectures. Which I think is pretty funny. And it's pretty humble. So, yeah, I don't know why, but that makes me laugh every time.
I was sitting in a dentist's office and looked at an article that said, how do lobsters grow? Well, I don't care how lobsters grow. But I was interested in it. And it points out that a lobster is a soft, mushy animal that lives inside of a rigid shell. That rigid shell does not expand. Well, how can the lobster grow? Well, as the lobster grows, that shell becomes very confining. Right? And the lobster feels itself under pressure and uncomfortable. It goes under a rock formation to protect itself from predatory fish, casts off the shell, and produces a new one. Well, eventually, that shell becomes very uncomfortable as it grows, right? Back under the rocks. Good. And the lobster repeats this numerous times. The stimulus for the lobster to be able to grow is that it feels uncomfortable. Right? Now, if lobsters had doctors, they would never grow. Because as soon as the lobster feels uncomfortable, goes to the doctor, gets a Valium, gets a Percocet, feels fine. never comes off its shell. So I think that we have to realize is that we have to realize that times of stress are also times that are signals for growth. And if we use adversity properly, we can grow through adversity.
So I want you to think of adversity as a spectrum, right? Stress, adversity are at kind of the shallow end of the pool. And at the deeper end of the pool is trauma. So it's a spectrum. And so adverse things, traumatic things happen. When they do, you essentially have a choice. You have two paths you can go down. But most people don't know that. There's plenty of people who are more than willing to send you to group therapy, to send you to individual therapy, and numb your symptoms. You can do that. In my opinion, that's the path of endurance. That is the path of hunkering down, although people wouldn't define it as such, but I would. And so you have a choice once you know. Or you can walk down a path of transformation that is the path of post-traumatic winning. And medication might be a part of it. Group therapy might be a part of it. Individual therapy might be a part of it. All those are tools. But it does not end at any of that, and the focus of it is not endurance. Post-traumatic winning ultimately comes to giving to others and then transforming their lives, which gives meaning to your pain and ultimately transforms your life. So to me, that choice is absolutely positively stark now. And I don't know if when I started doing this, that concept was as stark to me as it is now. And one other thing that as I've watched it more and more has crystallized in my head, and that is the Stockdale paradox. Admiral Stockdale was a senior POW at the Hanoi Hilton. Their record relative to coming home after a horrifying experience where they were kept from anywhere from 8 years to 4 months, many of them in solitary confinement, many of them tortured for years by the North Vietnamese. Their ability to survive that and come home with a diagnosed rate of PTSD of 4% is stunning. When you first read it, it's not believable. I didn't believe it. And everybody else comes home from Vietnam with a 30% rate of PTSD. Well, that makes sense, right? You think about that. And it's wow, right? As I said, stunning. So this is the Stockdale paradox, and there's two really important pieces to it, each of which have gotten more important to me the longer I do this. So this is Jim Collins speaking at the centennial celebration of Drucker University, talking about the Stockdale paradox.
And I got depressed reading the book because it seemed so bleak. It seemed so difficult. It seemed, you know, it's like we can all endure anything if we know it's going to come to an end and we know when. But what if you don't know if it's ever going to come to an end? And you certainly don't know when. So I asked Admiral Stockdale how he dealt with that. And he said, you have to realize I never got depressed because I never, ever wavered in my faith that not only I would get out, but I would turn being in the camp into the defining event of my life that in retrospect I would not trade. Later, when we were up the hill, I asked him, I said, Admiral Stockdale, who didn't make it out as strong as you? And he said, easy, it was the optimists. I said, the optimists? You sounded optimistic. He said, no, I was not optimistic. I never wavered in my faith that I would prevail in the end, but I was not optimistic. I said, what's the difference? Well, the optimists always thought we'd be out by Christmas. Of course, Christmas would come and it would go. And then we were going to be out by Easter and Thanksgiving, and then Christmas would come again, and they died of a broken heart. And that's when Admiral Stockdale grabbed me by the shoulders and said, this is what I learned. When you're facing, you're imprisoned by great calamity, by great difficulty, by great uncertainty, you have to, on the one hand, never confuse the need for unwavering faith that you will find a way to prevail in the end. With, on the other hand, the discipline to confront the most brutal facts we actually face. And we're not getting out of here by Christmas.
So the way these things are linked to me, and I don't know if they were clearly linked in my mind before, but I see them clearly linked now. One of the purposes of post-traumatic winning is to restore and sometimes for the first time show people, everybody who comes and everybody who sees post-traumatic winning, by the time they leave the presentation, that there is an unwavering belief that there is a path for you to walk so that you can prevail over traumatic events in the end. To me, post-traumatic winning fits inside the Stockdale paradox. I tell them that this is not PhD stuff. This is Lance Corporal stuff. This is the truth of the Lance Corporal. And you know, if you sit there or stand there and try to bullshit Lance Corporals, if you try to bullshit Junior Marines, it simply won't work. It doesn't work. Literally, they will laugh you out of the building. Go ahead and try to bullshit them sometimes. And they will laugh you straight out of the entrance. And the second part, confronting the truth, reveals the fourth path, Interstate 4, the Trail of Transformation. I would tell you that the path of endurance is the Trail of Tears, to use a historical term, a term that's normally associated with the forced migration of Native Americans from the southeastern part of the United States to quote-unquote Indian lands west of the Mississippi in the 1800s. But in this case, the Trail of Tears refers to trying to endure, not seeing a way to transform, self-medicating or medicating, period, and going to talk or group therapy with the intention of holding on. But endurance is a dark place, like the rabbi talks about the lobster. Numbing yourself, trying to get through it, trying to exist with it. To me, what post-traumatic winning does is it gives them this vision. It restores hope that, wow, not only can I live a good life, I can live a great life. That's absolutely fundamental to post-traumatic winning. And then there's the other part of the paradox, and that is, the second part is the discipline part of it, right? The discipline to confront the truth. One of the things that I talk to everybody about is how much different they are from their culture today. I tell them that I wasn't very different from the other kids I grew up with, even though I did join the Marine Corps. There were a lot of kids like me growing up. And then I tell them that the rest of the culture isn't like them. The rest of the culture doesn't do the things that they do. Not only did you join the military, you've also joined what is perceived to be the most difficult branch of the military, the United States Marine Corps. That means you're not afraid of a challenge, and that's the thing that makes the Marine Corps different. It's not the things that we do at Parris Island and MCRD. That's not what makes the Marine Corps different. What makes the Marine Corps different is that people who look at this branch of the service and look at the challenge that it is, and look at the way that it recruits, and we think, I'll give that a try. We're pretty sure we can do it. We're confident, at least most of us are, but we're not completely sure. And each one of us looks at this and says, I'll try that. The people who will do that are different, and that's what makes the Marine Corps different. And then once they get here, we put a uniform on them and shine them up and teach them everything they're supposed to know. But what makes the Marine Corps fundamentally different, is, in my opinion, is that. is that chip on their shoulder? Is that it's that desire to take the more difficult path? And then who recruits with a recruiting slogan of maybe you could be one of us? Nobody recruits like that. At least nobody who wants somebody to join their organization. And all of that, the uniqueness of who walks through the door and the discipline, in this case, to confront the truth and go where the truth leads you, and that is to Interstate 4, the trail of transformation, the path of post-traumatic winning. But it will only appear if you're willing to confront the truth. Kind of like Brigadoon, right? Brigadoon's not there all the time. Brigadoon only appears at certain times. But if you'll confront the truth, you'll see path number 4. And so it's really interesting because throughout the course of the week, Marines and sailors and will come up and they want to talk. I had one Marine, a staff sergeant, come up, tell me his wife was, I believe, presenting her PhD dissertation last week. They were both at that mass shooting in Las Vegas. She's doing her dissertation on PTSD. The shooting at the Mandalay Bay at that concert. That event changed both of their lives. I had another sergeant or corporal come up to me and tell me that he thought the presentation was fantastic, that he wanted to get out, go to college on the MESEP program, right? The enlisted commissioning program. Come back in the Navy as a mental health professional, get commissioned, be a Navy doc, specializing in mental health. And I said, well, take my card. Anything I can do to help you, just let me know. And then you have Marines who come up and they're struggling. And they say, as I sat there and listened, it was like you were talking to me. And I always say, I was talking to you. A lot of them don't realize how far they've come. All they see is the blackness. And I tell them, after sitting through this, you can see the fourth path now, right? You can see that trail. Because you're on it. You just don't know. You're grumbling and you've stumbled into it. You can see it, though, can't you? And they smile and they say... They say, I can see it. And the single most important thing that I tell them is, hey, look, man, now that you know this stuff, just don't isolate yourself. If you're not afraid to talk to the people that care about you about your shit, once you get to that point, you pretty much conquered it. Right? Now, not everything. But if you're willing to talk about it and not isolate yourself and you understand these things and you're willing to study and talk, you're there, man. The rest is just getting it done. But if you think your problems are unique, you think you can't talk to anybody, and you're in that place right now, that's when life gets really difficult. You're alone. You're struggling with your demons. And so you got to come out of that. And what you need to know is that everybody's got them. Everybody struggles with them. And most of us are just faking and getting through the day. Another interesting part of my discussions with young Marines and sailors is that they're reluctant to talk about this stuff with other people. They question whether they should talk about these things because they're not experts. And if I'm not an expert, how do I tell somebody, how do I tell somebody about this? Answer, you don't talk to them as an expert. You talk to them as a friend. Quote, hey man, I saw this and it helped me. I'd like to show it to you. And I look at him and I say, can you do that? And they smile and they say, yeah, I could do that. I said, there you go. If you found a gas station that had really cheap gas, would you tell your friends? Of course you would. So if you see something that's a good idea that you think makes sense relative to mental health, would you not tell them? You don't have to come off as an expert, but it's interesting how often that comes up. And the other thing I tell them is this. When you're in a black place, when you're struggling, and you start looking at these three goals and 10 commandments, you want to look at it more. And so you don't need to pass yourself off as an expert. Just pass yourself off as a friend. I'd love to talk to you about this stuff if you want to. And then you have a conversation. And then it's cool because they smile and they're like, all right, I get it. I can do that. Well, no shit. That's all you got to do. And that's the beginning of ending somebody's isolation, of helping them see the path and essentially becoming a guide for them to the path of post-traumatic winning, to Interstate 4, and then collaborating them with them to go down the path and then watch what happens. And so when you, and I don't want to say break it down Barney style, because I mean, this is not easy stuff. I mean, because I think they assume that, oh, you have to be a PhD to help people. And I say, you don't. So, look, if they have a serious mental illness, absolutely. They need medical people. But if they're struggling, there's a lot of things that we can do as friends. And post-traumatic winning is a lot of wisdom. And then they start to kind of, you see their mood change and they smile. And they smile. And so then, you know, we talk about whatever. And so that part of it's wonderful. But they're confused, but they're curious and they want to talk. And then at the end I say, all right, get after it. Let me know how it goes. And they're so appreciative. I mean, it does. It's that Grinch moment when your heart grows because they've been struggling and they didn't know the path. And now they've seen it and it makes sense and it comes from their culture. And they're thinking about sharing it and helping somebody else. Very, very cool, cool stuff. I also need to thank everybody from Lieutenant General Heckle, the commanding general of the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force at Camp Pendleton, who I first crossed paths when he was a commanding general at 2nd Maw, to the commanding officer of the 15th MEW, Colonel Chris Bronzy, who spoke on Wednesday, to the commanding officer of Battalion Landing Team 1-4, Lieutenant Colonel Mike Regner, who spoke on Tuesday. All these leaders helped make this happen. And also a special shout-out to the operations officer of BLT-1-4, and that is Major Lurlin Lejeune. That's right. Relative of General John A. Lejeune from Louisiana. No kidding. So anyway, I know that was not a small commitment of time on the part of the battalion landing team. To make sure everybody got this message that there is a path that you can go down after these things darken your doorstep. That for most everybody that showed up, this will not be the last time this happens to you and that you can get through it. So it's very humbling to know that something that has come out of All Marine Radio, all the interviews that I've done here, would be looked at as something that might contribute in a positive way. So I'm extremely humbled by that opportunity, and I hope in some way, shape, or form that every Marine and sailor that sat through post-traumatic winning now sees a path that maybe they did not see before and now see their role in helping others, and is now on their way not only to feeling better about life's challenges and especially when trauma enters your life, but also better about being able to help other people and change their lives. So pretty cool last few days. And also pretty exhausting, but a good exhausting. And easy to go to sleep at night. So with all that said, Whitney Houston sings the national anthem, as she does every Friday. Good morning to you. As always, Whitney Houston with an incredible job. Now, I have to tell you this. If you're listening to this, first of all, I'm glad you're listening to this because I think there's some very, very good stuff in here. Because I always learn every time I go do post-traumatic winning. And it's interesting. The presentation gets more tightly woven and better connected the more I learn. So, but I did have a problem on Friday, and so I've had to re-record this. Yeah, not the easiest thing in the world. I had to go through some of the audio got corrupted right at about the 22-minute mark, and I had to go through and listen and create a script, and then from that script, I had to go ahead and redo this hour. Hour one on Friday. But I thought it was important because the things that I learned and the experience this past week has been unbelievable. So more than happy to do it. So I'm not going to bother with the temperatures today, but I will say this. This hour is dedicated to the Marines and Sailors of BLT-14 and the 15th MU. I just want to say it was an absolute privilege and an honor to spend a few days with them. And as I said previous, I hope that in some way, shape, or form that what they got exposed to in post-traumatic winning helps them see the world a little bit different, help them see a path that maybe they didn't see before, and will certainly allow them to live great lives and also to help other people live great lives as well. So this is dedicated to them.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. We're not doing any weather today, but I got a few more things before I sign off for the day. Had a lieutenant come up to me. No, it was a corporal. Telling me how much he enjoyed listening to General Zinni. I was like, holy smokes. Had a lieutenant come up to me, and he says that he listens to All Marine Radio. And I said, nice. And he said, you know, I started listening a couple years ago when General Furness issued his letter, and there's that big discussion about discipline. And so I wanted to understand the discussion better. I wanted to understand what people were talking about, so I started listening. I listened to the interviews, the one you did with General Furness. Said it helped me understand the issue more. So I looked at him and said, so now that you're here, what do you think? And he smiled and said, I think we need to talk about it more. Then I had a major. It's just the cool stuff that happens to me during the week, right, when I'm doing this stuff. He's the former OPSO of 1-5. His name's Cole LePerrier. But I always butcher his name, so I think I screw that up. I'm even nervous to say it right now. So when I did post-traumatic winning for 1-5 about a year ago, I had two Marines introduce it. The first was the Lance Corporal. I had met him a few months earlier. He listened to post-traumatic winning, contacted me. We started talking. And I met him down at Pendleton. And I think he came and saw it. And the reason he came to see it, because he was struggling. And he had gone on liberty with some of his Marine friends up in Huntington Beach. They'd gone out drinking, had gone back to their hotel, were playing video games, and were going to run across the street to get something to eat at McDonald's before it closed down at midnight or whenever the hell McDonald's closes down. And so they run across the street, unbeknownst to them. Somehow or other, he gets hit by a car. Now, this Marine blames himself. He said, I know it wasn't completely my fault, but I didn't think he was that drunk. I mean, we had been drinking, but he said, I'll never forget the sounds of the car skidding, the sounds of the collision, and then the aftermath. And, he said, I have to live with that. And so he stood up in front of his peers and talked about that. And, so that's what I call the first table flipping moment. So you come into something, you don't want to be there, and all of a sudden you're listening to that. And, And what I hope everybody says is, yeah, I don't know what I walked into today, but this is not like anything I've ever been to, right? This is not how this stuff starts. Colonel Bronzy did that on Wednesday. And it's, again, it's just so important, that first table-flipping moment when somebody they see as credible comes back and say, hey, look, you know, I went to Iraq. I came home. I within 6 months, I deployed again, and I came home after that, and I was struggling. And this is something that, you know, most of us will go through. So it's really helpful when guys like Colonel Bronzy do it, because a lot of junior Marines think people senior to them, you know, don't deal with this. So you want to dispel that, especially for the senior Marines in the audience. So, I was telling you about Major LePierrier. The name's killing me, right? So, he's walking by the gym at Camp Horno. He sees the post-traumatic winning logo on the screen. And he figures, I can't be far away. So, he sticks his head in the back of the gym. And he yells, Mac! And I said, what's up, man? Welcome home. So, he comes walking in. And let me tell you about him. So he was the other person that did an introduction when I did it for 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. And he stood up and he talked about the challenges that one of his daughter has and what a special girl she is. And she has her challenge is physical, and it's she has a condition where her spinal column is compromised, and which led to other complications. But anyway, so she has significant challenges in front of her. And so, but he talked about what an incredible human being she is and how much she adds to his life. And he can't do it, obviously, without getting emotional. But afterwards, he and I were talking, again, this is a year ago, and he said, I'm not sure that was a good idea. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, I'm not sure. He said, I just don't know if that was the right thing. I said, well, I think you're going to find that it is, you know, so you let me know. So he comes walking in the gym and he comes up to me and he says, you know, the whole time we were deployed, Marines came up to me and talked to me about that introduction I did for post-traumatic winning. And I said, told ya. And I said, do you remember our conversation? And he said, I do. And he laughed. I said, no, man. I said, it's powerful stuff. It's powerful stuff. And he said, you know, we'd be in the weirdest places. We'd be in the weirdest places, and Marines would come up. He said, we were in the jungle of Thailand, and some Marines in the COC, and all of a sudden he and I are standing there, and he says, hey, sir, could I talk to you? And he said, yeah, Mac. He said, it was crazy. I said, there you go. I said, no, that's really another bit of evidence of how important it is not to fake it. There's all kinds of other people out there that are struggling with whatever you're struggling with. And when people realize it and they begin to share and they begin to talk, I mean, it's a life-changing experience. And so it was great to see him. And then another friend of mine from Iraq, he's retired now, but his name is Brad Lee, works at the division down at Pendleton. And he was at a planning conference up at Horno, so got a chance to see him and talk to him for a while. So he was going to go to another meeting with a friend of ours by the name of Mike Frazier. They're Artie guys, raising money for a memorial at the 11th Marines base camp at Camp Las Pulgas aboard Camp Pendleton. So like I said before, a very humbling opportunity, and like I said, hopefully was able to show a light on a path that a lot of people don't know is there. Hopefully that path is life-changing. Hopefully they know that there is a path for them, that not only through their most recent experience, but for the rest of their life, they can walk that path. So, again, just a great week for post-traumatic winning, and hopefully for the Marines and Sailors of BLT-14. So on this Friday, actually it's Sunday because I'm re-recording it. Hope you had a great Friday. Hope you had a great weekend. And All Marine Radio will be back on Monday. So have a great day on a Friday. All Marine Radio out.